You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And it's game day. It's finally game day after that scrappy, crappy is the perfect word for it, fourth quarter against the Detroit Pistons. I'm ready to forget about that game and talk about a new game. They got the Mavs tonight, Luka mania, Dirk mania. We'll break all that down. I want to look ahead at that game. I want to talk about how well Thaddeus Young is playing. And then, can you believe it? I'm going to voice frustrations with the front office. Am I allowed to do that? Do I have the pedigree to be able to be angry with something the front office did? It's very minor. Stay tuned for that. I don't think anyone. You'll hear it and go, oh, come on. But I think it's worth talking about. But let's start with the Mavs. The Mavs are struggling right now. They've lost 6 of the last 7 games, with their only win being a 1-point win over the Portland Trail Blazers on February 10th. So they're sort of in free fall as they sent away some contributors for Kristaps Porzingis, along with a bunch of draft picks. So their future looks really good with Doncic and Porzingis. Their present does not look so good, especially with no first-round pick coming up. But they have made what I think are all great moves along the way. Their starting lineup right now, or in their last game against the Clippers, which was on Monday night, they ran out Luka, Dorian Finney-Smith, Tim Hardaway, Dwight Powell, and Dirk, and 4 of those guys played over 30 minutes. Luka is that only like really effective player of that group. I'm a big Dwight Powell guy, actually. He was 10 for 11 in that game. He finished with 24 points and 8 rebounds, but he's not going to be that good again. But that's not a super awesome lineup, and their bench has like Trey Burke and Jalen Brunson and Justin Jackson, a lot of younger dudes, and then Maxi Kleber and Salomejri, you know, inexperienced guys, not quite so young. So they're a team of either really old heads or really young dudes, with Tim Hardaway Jr. thrown in the middle. Excuse me, I still have this cough from yesterday. So they're kind of a mismatched roster, and they all have skills, but outside of Doncic, no one's really a difference maker. So I think the strategy there is pretty simple. We saw what Wes Matthews can do when he was guarding Bradley Beal in that Wizards game. In that first half, he did a great job limiting Beal even shooting. Not just forcing misses, it was forcing him to shoot at all. I think he only had 6 or 7 shots in the first half. Now, he went off in the second half, and Matthews deserves some blame for that. But if he can put together even one half like that, that should slow down the Mavs enough for the Pacers to be able to win this game, just because, you know, you get them down by enough, then suddenly they're either Doncic has to go crazy or they're going to just go to their bench, and none of those guys are particularly good. So I think that you know, you get one good West defensive half and this game is over, but you still gotta win on the margins. That's how every game is. The first time these two teams played, Luka got ejected, actually, so hard to say how effective he was in that game. But before that, they did a great job on him. Their scheme was fantastic. He was 3 for 14 from the field. He was a -6. The team was a -6 with him on the floor, excuse me. And I think that game, Victor was playing, I believe, and guarding him for some of it. So we'll see what the cross match is, but I imagine it's going to be Matthews. Matthews played for the Mavs last time these two teams played, which is super interesting. He had 17 points in a Dallas uniform, so I look forward to that being flipped. And, you know, that's what Harrison Barnes and DeAndre Jordan last time these two teams played. Harrison Barnes had 20 points and DeAndre had 15 points and 16 rebounds. So they have lost a lot of contributions, and it's hard to draw a ton from this game. But what you can say is Sabonis killed it off the bench against Dwight Powell. And quick aside on Sabonis, I should have done a segment on this, I didn't even think about it. Sabonis is going to miss from J. Michael a handful of games with his ankle rolling. Thankfully, their next 4, excuse me, I just bumped my microphone, consist of Minnesota, Dallas, Orlando, and Chicago. So 4 not very good teams that they should be okay to roll with Kyle O'Quinn, and then hopefully he can get ready for the Milwaukee game in March. That's when their really tougher stretch starts. But for now, it'll be Kyle O'Quinn with the second unit. Anyway, what I was going to say is Sabonis had 16 and 11 against Dwight Powell off the bench last time. Well, now Powell's starting, and like I already mentioned, their backup center is like Salomejri, and O'Quinn is better than Mejri. Like, I know O'Quinn is a step down from any of the Pacers centers, but he can hang with Salomejri, let me tell you that. He filled in amply as a starter. I imagine he's going to do just fine with this second unit. So this is a perfect game for him to be thrown in with the second unit because, if you'll recall, in the two games he played before Sabonis' injury, he was starting. So he's playing more minutes with the first five. Now he'll be thrown in with the second five. Good game to ease that in because Mejri's a beast on the glass. He's just a tall, kind of smooth player, but not particularly skilled or quick. So he won't. I don't think he'll be able to do much that Kyle Quinn is unable to handle. So in that way, I think they can do a good job in these bench minutes. Nothing really about the Mavs bench screams like, oh, they can get a bunch of points from this guy or that guy. In the Clippers game, they scored 112, and their bench scored 24 of those points. So I think that's a good summation of their bench right now. Mejri had none in over 12 minutes. Trey Burke had none. Justin Jackson had none. Neither of those last two guys played very much, albeit. But they're just not getting anything from those guys. So I think you shut down Luka and you force some other guys who aren't as good at creating their own shot or as good at creating an offense to score. And then there's your game. O'Quinn squeezing in off the bench will be interesting. Wesley Matthews against his former team will be interesting. But outside of Luka, this game doesn't have a ton for me. Miles Turner back in his hometown, though. I am looking forward to that. Hopefully, after his struggles against Detroit, that game got out of hand for pretty much every Pacers post player with an injury or a bad foul or just playing bad. Hopefully, he can get back on track and look a little better in front of some family and friends. I know there were rumblings a while ago about Turner potentially going to the Mavs. Thankfully, his contract extension has ruined all that, but this game will still be interesting to see how he steps up in front of those people. So I look forward to seeing how that goes. But, yeah, I'm going to reduce it to Luka. Stop Luka, you win. And I think they're going to do it because they're going to be mad about that Pistons game. Things didn't go their way on the scoreboard and in the foul. The refereeing department, they just have a massive chip on their shoulder. So I look forward to them coming out with a fire and hopefully, like McMillan got mad about, not dropping a bunch of points in the first quarter. So it'll be a fun one tonight. I look forward to it. But let's move on. I want to talk about Thaddeus Young because we don't talk about Thaddeus Young enough, and it's time. So stick around. Let's talk about that. So let's play a game, if it's even possible, since we can't physically see each other. But I want you to envision what you think Thaddeus Young is averaging on the stat sheet since January 1st. Are you doing it? You're doing a great job. The answer is 13.7 points, 7.4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.8 steals. He is killing it. He's shooting 56% from the field, 48% from 3, 74% from the free throw line. Those are unbelievable numbers to go with how good his defense is. I can't say enough good things about what has happened to him all of a sudden now that he can shoot the three, because now he's reliable from everywhere. He used to be just reserved the dunker role, and it kind of clogged things up, not really, but because he was a threat there at least, but it did give like tighter passing lanes and all that. But now he can stretch out and actually hit it, and he can take guys off the dribble with his shot fake that he always used even before he was hitting the three. And he's just added so much by having that to the offense that is so crucial, and it's been such a treat to watch him be this player on both ends. And since the Oladipo injury, I think his stats are even better. I want you to now envision those while I actually click through and pull it up. I love this crystal ball fake game we're doing here. His scoring's down from the number I just told you, 12.3 since Oladipo got hurt, but still shooting 51, 40, 80 splits. 7.4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.8 steals. Just a monster. I mean, I can't say enough about how he has stepped up as a captain as a player in this run. Like, the fact that he has games leading the team in scoring or leading the team in rebounding, or I think even one time he led the team in assists in that game. He had 8, I think, against the Lakers, 7, something like that. He's just doing so many good things, and a lot of them are the things that you're like, you don't notice: deflection, screen assists, standing in the right spot, cutting off angles, things that not even outside of stats, like even watching the game, you don't even like notice them because you're like watching the ball or something like that. It's just been the craziest thing to see him step up like this. Matt Moore just gave him love as the Pacers' best defensive player. I would not go that far. I think he's been the best overall player in this 14-game run without 14 games now, by the way. Can you believe that? They've played 14 games without Oladipo. He's just been so good, and we do not talk. I try my best to, it's kind of my shtick now to be like, oh, Thad's the best player on the team now that Vic's hurt. But I mean it. I really think I really think he's been the best player. You know, I'm not just talking out my ass when I do that, because I mean, two-way player who can now shoot, like, that is the prototypical four in today's NBA, and Pritchard's been clamoring for that guy. He finally has it, and it turns out to be the guy that they already had, who was an amazing defender, and I'm just so happy for him and so happy for the team that they found a reliable guy on both ends of the floor, especially at a position where they don't have a good backup, because the Leaf has been struggling again recently. And since December, when they really went on a run, shooting 42% for basically 3 months now, 14.3 points per game is really wild. Plus, the team outscores their opponents by over 5 points per game with them on the floor since December 1st. Like, they basically start off every game up 5-0 because Thad Young is playing. It's just unfair. That's the value he has every night. Man, I'm so sorry about the coughing, everybody. And it's hard to talk about Thad without saying, like, glue guy, or, like, you know, like I said, like, the angles, the things you don't see because you're not watching him. You have to watch him, which is not fun, not as fun, but it's important. It's important to have guys like that on every team. I think, you know, the every championship team has their, you know, Iguodala, Sean Livingston guy, and the Rockets have their PJ Tucker, and, like, the Cavs last year had, well, I don't know if the Cavs actually had the perfect guy for it. But every team has, like, the vet who can really defend and do gritty stuff, and I think it's an important player. I think the Pacers have it in Thad Young, and I saw on Twitter today someone lobbed it was Twitch, actually. It was Jonathan Washburn. He said, who would you bring back of all the free agents, rank them? I might be ready. Actually, I am ready to put Thad over Bojan. I think I'd rather keep Thaddeus Young than Bojan Bogdanovic next year, just because I think Thad offers so much. He's so important on both ends of the floor. And I know Bojan is fantastic as a wing, but he just does just enough things that, like, frustrate me and limit his impact, that I would probably put him just behind Thad on that list of guys I would re-sign. But yeah, Thad rant is over. I hope you enjoyed me yelling at you about the best player on the team. And I know that Sabonis and Turner will get their votes from people. You know, they've both been very good as the center rotation, but the way Thad has stepped up on and off the floor cannot be overlooked any longer. So, yeah, pay attention to Thad. Try this tonight or against Minnesota or whatever, next time you're able to watch. Try just watching Thad Young for a few possessions, especially on defense, and you'll be like, wow, you know, he's just doing so much. And it'll give you a more appreciation for, A, all the things that go into playing defense in the NBA, which, like, if you don't, even me, like, I don't know their scheme. I kind of get it, but I don't know their scheme. I'm just kind of guessing, like, what is good and bad. But you can tell he's doing good things, and you learn a lot about defense just by watching him. So I would recommend that. One more segment where I'm going to get up on my high horse and complain about something the front office did. It's very minor, but I think you'll enjoy me getting angry. So stick around for one more segment. Okay, so today the Pacers tweet out a transaction. Very minor one. They talk about their G League moves all the time. Ike Anibogu comes up to get rehab. He goes back down. Alize Johnson comes up to hang out with the team. He goes back down. Davon Reed comes up and down. You know, we see these things, and they are what they are. Today, the Pacers tweeted, Edmund Sumner will go play with the Mad Ants. They're playing Canton, I think right now, actually. I don't have the score in front of me. They sent Sumner down. Okay. Why did they sign Sumner to a two-year contract if they had this in their plans? Because he takes up a roster spot, and now his qualifying offer is different. Whereas you could have just extended him in the summer or converted him later after the season and had the same effect and not be wasting a roster spot on a potential bio contributor. And I know this is the stupidest thing ever because, like, he earned it. You know, he played all right in those games. He showed flashes of potential. He's been completely killing in the G League. I mean, I almost, like blink twice or three times. You know, that blinking guy gif you see a lot on Twitter. 24 points per game in the G League. Like, that just blows my mind because G League scoring averages are different because they just are. I mean, everyone's trying to shoot every time they get the ball. That's just crazy to me that he's averaging that many points. And yet, you know, we all watched him play for the Pacers. He's very jittery on offense. He doesn't have the sets down or anything. Like, his defense is really good. He's got these long arms and athleticism. He is, I think, a fringe NBA player. So at some point, I think he should have gotten a contract. But if there is in the plans that he's going to play with the G League team, I think you have to keep him on a two-way. I think you have to say, okay, we have a tool designed to leave you down with this team and play with them anyway. We're just going to leave you on this deal so we can keep our roster spot open, potentially sign a contributor for who can help us in the playoffs, and then we'll convert you at the start of next year or give you a qualifying offer and keep you around. Something other than this, because to me, now they're just gave him a deal. They rewarded him with a deal. That's fine. I guess on the surface, that's fine. But to me, when the opportunity cost is on a team that lost their best player due to injury, your opportunity cost is a roster spot, and that roster spot could be used as a potential contributor in the playoffs. I think this matters a lot. And it's like the value of promoting Sumner beyond rewarding him is like he's with the team every day. So he is learning those sets, and he's learning about life in the NBA and traveling and all these things. And now he's not. He's back to the G League. He's just making more money to be there. And it's just very, very frustrating to me that, you know, I mean, I'm not really, I can't put the right word on how I'm feeling, because I think he's, like, the contract is fine. It doesn't actually matter. I just think it's bizarre, and unless he ran out of days, but even then, you could just keep him in the G League all year. He's not playing. He hasn't played since Tyreek got healthy. And if the plan was always to sign Wesley Matthews, and they signed Sumner after Wesley Matthews, so they already knew they were going to have Matthews in the rotation, it's like just a lot of blocks that they stacked on top of each other that didn't make sense to me, and A, the order that they did them, and now how they're handling it. And I also think Sumner deserves playing time. He should play in the G League. He should get these minutes. Like, all these individual things on their own are fine, but in totality, it's like you had a guy in a deal. You could have kept him anyway, and you could have used the roster spot for something more constructive, but instead, you chose to do this thing that impedes you from improving your team. And you could have done the same steps everywhere, other step of the way the same. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I tweeted that I have a lot of questions, and everyone said, like, oh, they wanted to get playing time. Like, yeah, I get why they sent him to the G League now. But why did they sign him to the deal if this was ever part of their plans? It's just confusing to me. If anyone has a clue why they think that it happened the way it did, let me know. And nothing individual steps-wise, like A, B, C, D, E, A being two-way contract, B, plays good in minutes, C, gets deal, D, doesn't play, all that stuff is fine given the events surrounding it. It's just in totality, it's like, I feel like, you know, you could have done it in a different way and had better results. You know, nothing was wrong, but it could have been better. It's basically what I'm saying, and it seems like poor planning, especially because they already had Matthews on the roster. So thank you for listening to my mini rant about a very inconsequential thing. But I'm happy for Sumner getting the deal. I think he's going to be on the team next year. There's no way they're going to decline his team option. I think it's good he's getting minutes in Fort Wayne. Like, all those things are good. It's just in totality, I am displeased with the events that have transcribed. But it is what it is. It doesn't actually matter. He's not going to play for the team in this Mavs game because he's with the G League team. Maybe I'll join them for the Minnesota game. Who knows? But that's all I wanted to talk to you guys about today. Tonight's game should be fun. Tomorrow, voice permitting, it'll be me again after the game talking Mavs, looking ahead at the Timberwolves and figuring out some player to highlight or something like that. So stick around for that. And then Adam on the weekend to talk about some more action. Thank you guys for tuning in, and have a great rest of your day.